We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling. I wish I could give this feeling.
Welcome to The Corner. I'm Kel Dansby, journalist for BSO.
I'm Andreas Hale, journalist for goddamn everybody.
And we are coming at you from Insert Coins Bar and Arcade in downtown Vegas. Today we have two guests stopping by The Corner, and we have to talk about Andreas' WrestleMania weekend.
Woo!
Even though he had whack seats, but we'll get to that later.
That's bullshit. Stop. Don't do that. I had great seats. I just wasn't in the front row, but I could see all right, anyway.
First, we got to talk boxing, though. And we're going to start with the Kovalev-Stevenson mandatory.
Kovalev. Well, let's talk about Stevenson and Bika first.
Okay.
And then we'll talk about with Steven because he wants to fight Kovalev, and that's really convenient.
Semantics. You know, excuse me if I'm looking past Bika a little bit.
Because everybody is.
He has a chance?
A puncher's chance. We know Stevenson gets a little shaky when he gets hit.
Yeah. Maybe a chance. I mean, Bika has some skills. I'm not trying to undermine him, and he's good. He could beat up on mid-class fighters, which is a talent in its own right. But once again, it's a championship fight, and I'm not sure if he's now championship caliber.
No, but yeah, obviously the thing is that we got Bika and Stevenson fighting this weekend on CBS, right?
CBS.
Adonis Stevenson goes on the air after, during the Gary Russell, Johnny Gonzalez broadcast and says he now wants to fight Kovalev, right? This is the same guy that said that ducked fighting Kovalev, signed with Al Haymon, and started, what did he fight, Fontana first, and then he kind of moseyed around, and now because it's a mandatory, he conveniently says, oh yes, I want to fight Sergey Kovalev. Get out of here. You buying this dude really wants to get in the ring with Sergey Kovalev?
I think he wants that money. I mean, you look at Adonis, he's not young. This is like it for him. It's the last hurrah. Do I think he's going to win? Probably not. I mean, his chin isn't ironclad by any means. But he needs this fight. And right now we see a boxing landscape where a lot of people need fights. And they recognize that. And really, I think Al Haymon's demanding it. He's about that money right now. Yeah, he's like, yo, we're making the best fights possible. And everyone's kind of coattailed off of that.
Yeah, but I mean, it's about a check. But it's also about getting your ass whooped, too. And the problem with Sergey Kovalev right now is he's looking better each and every fight. Adonis might have had a better chance fighting him, you know, last year. Maybe not. He probably still would have got washed. But I just find it's real convenient that Stevenson all of a sudden wants this fight. And I get why he wants it, but it's like, come on, man. It's kind of transparent that why you didn't want it before and now that you want it now. And fighting a guy like Bika and fighting these guys haven't really tuned you up for a guy the caliber of the Crusher.
No, but he needed that, I guess, that confidence. Because it's a whole different world. You got to go in there with confidence, let alone, you know, the skill. I mean, if you got to build one or the other, he chose to build the confidence. He thinks he can knock him out.
Right.
I mean, we've seen Kovalev go to the mat. He got up and just wrecked people after. But, you know, he's not immune to being knocked down.
Not immune, but look, bottom line, Stevenson's going to get his ass whipped when he gets...
Yeah. Nobody's going to the decision.
No. Somebody's going to die.
So someone's head is going to be in the second row. Like, it's just the nature of that fight, and that's what fans want to see. And honestly, if they both touch the mat and they both get up and then Stevenson gets knocked out, maybe he gets a rematch.
Yeah, okay. So we also have big knockout boxing happening this weekend.
Oh, talking about people's head in the first row. And there's nothing to stop it in big knockout boxing.
First of all, for people who don't understand, Kelly, did you go to the first one?
I didn't go to the first one. What was I doing? It was in July, right?
It was last April. I don't know.
It was like last July. Yeah. It was like UFC fight weekend or something. Yeah. Like, it was around there. I didn't go.
But you've seen what this is.
Oh, right? I saw it.
What do you think of this?
I mean, it's as close as we get to the gladiators, right? Like, it's, you really have nowhere to go.
It's true. I mean, okay, so this week we got, it's Gabriel Rosado and Curtis Stevens fighting. Curtis was supposed to be in the first one, pulled out because he had a bigger fight. I believe he fought. And he lost the fight.
Lost, yeah.
But Rosado stepped in, took on Brian Vera, scored a big knockout.
Did well, yep.
Hadn't won a fight since 2012, but score this big win, and he's their BKB's middleweight champion. So he has a chance to put the promotion on his back with somebody like Curtis Stevens. Curtis Stevens says, I'm going to knock his motherfucking ass out and take that check. That's what he told me. That's a quote. So it makes it fun to see, you know, these guys throwing down. But I don't know if it's going to last too long. It's a spectacle at the end of the day. It's not boxing. It's still new, and it's one of those things that I think will be gone soon. But I think eat it up while you can, and if people get knocked out along the way, let's enjoy it.
It can stay for like a year or two. Like, yeah. If they made it, you know, twice a year, three times a year, when boxing dies down a bit, you know, no Floyd fight, no one else, you know, you put in August and maybe, you know, January. There's no huge fights. Catch them off guard, and you put, like, some well-known fighters in there and tell them just to brawl.
Yeah.
It can be, like, that good, you know, just obscure fight for the fan. Like, you know, just get the casual fans building up. It's like WrestleMania and SummerSlam. Like, mm-hmm. you know, people tune in just for those two, even if, you know, casual wrestling fans and people that knock wrestling all day on Twitter. You know who you are. We saw you.
Yeah.
But you showed up for WrestleMania, and you'll show up for SummerSlam.
Yep.
So if they do two a year, it could build their audience.
Yep. And before we go into WrestleMania, this amazing weekend that you tried to shit on by saying that I had shitty seats, while it wasn't true, we got an update. Pacquiao Mayweather report. There's always something that came
every time.
And all we heard was Pacquiao has leg cramps. This is nothing new. Pacquiao's had leg cramps for God knows how long. There was a great story on Grantland written up some time ago about Pacquiao and his leg cramps. Is there anything to make out of this, or are we just trying to field stories until the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight happens?
I mean, everything is a story. I mean, everything is to make out of it. When you're fighting the best in the world, leg cramps matter. They really do. They didn't matter against everyone else. Everyone else wasn't Floyd. Mm-hmm. That's just the gist of it. I mean, anything during the build-up matters, and Pacquiao might be perfectly fine. Obviously, he's dealt with it for quite some time. He knows how to get through it. He pushes through it. His body changes between now and the fight. It's a training camp thing. I've never heard of him complain of it during a fight.
No.
So it's, you know, something part of his process. But I guarantee you Floyd isn't cramping up. Floyd is perfectly healthy. He's training every day. You know, and the back and forth is great. I can listen to Roach talk and, you know, Floyd Sr. and Raj. I want to listen to those guys. I'm glad Mayweather's not talking. Pacquiao's not talking. I love the extra people around it. Bob Arum today said he heard Floyd isn't looking too great. Like, Bob, are you in the gym? They let Bob in that gym.
Bob, they ain't letting you shoot in the gym.
Bob's
been in the gym, but I don't know if he would even know.
Right now,
like,
Bob ain't allowed on Spring Mountain Road. Bob got to stay on Sahara and Flamingo. Like, they don't even let Bob nowhere near there. He can't go get pho.
Yeah.
Right there if he wanted to. No boba tea, no nothing. Bob, yeah. You're not at the gym.
Yep, true enough. So that concludes our boxing segment because it's light this week. It was WrestleMania weekend, bruh.
Yeah, somebody was in the house for that.
That would be me.
Yeah, yeah.
Not
in the attic. See, I no jab. Not in the attic. No, nowhere. You were right there.
I have a feeling there's going to be more jabs coming later today.
Hey, I don't know where this is going to go. you were there though.
Yo, yes, and I went as a fan, right? Because like, that's my thing. WrestleMania is probably one of the last things that I do that I get to do as a fan because I cover every other sport. I cover, you know, so many genres, everything. So it's like I buy tickets and I go as a fan, and I don't sit here and try to write about it, you know. It's I wanted to hang out. So, yeah, WrestleMania is a spectacle. It was amazing.
Well, first, let's touch on real quick before you go into your WrestleMania spiel.
Yeah.
And just geeking out.
Yeah.
How was ROH?
ROH was good.
You're mad that you didn't go to Next?
I'm pissed I didn't go to Next. I know the mic's gonna be pissed. I'm pissed that I didn't go to Next. Look, NXT, I bought my ROH tickets in advance, and I expected a great show. Samoa Joe and Briscoe put on a great show. Strangely enough, though, the rest of the card was kind of lacking. The Red Dragon match with the Kingdom, while it was good, Kyle O'Reilly gets hurt late, so they couldn't pull off the Chasing the Dragon finisher, so kind of wasn't great there. The Jay Lethal, Jushin Thunder Liger match was supposed to be better than what it was. Lethal carried that match. Then some of the other matches were a little lackluster. The six-man with Ciampa and Evan Bourne, Matt Sydal, and who else? Cedric Alexander. That was great. It was a lot of fun. A lot of people. Seth Rollins was actually in the house, too, hiding backstage.
Melissa
was there. A few other people there. ACH I know as soon as his match wrapped up, he took off and went to NXT to go watch. I should have rolled with him.
Yo, just like, let me ride shotgun real quick.
Yeah, but I had FOMO. I had fear of missing out. While I was sitting there in NXT and I heard that the time he hit the GTS, I was pissed. I was legit mad that I didn't drive my ass 30 minutes to just go down there. But I needed Samoa Joe's like my favorite wrestler. That's not in the WWE, and he has been for quite some time. So the chance to see him live before he goes NXT, because he's making the jump.
Yeah.
I needed to do it. And they had a great performance. Joe lost, sorry. But he couldn't win because he's leaving soon. So wrestlers got to carry that belt.
No, definitely. And, you know, we touched on NXT and amazing card and all that. But let's talk about WrestleMania. You were there. It seemed like you showed up early, like 2 o'clock.
Yeah. So me and my boy Marcus Vandenberg, another fellow Mark, we went out. Bought our tickets. We got there and decided to go there about 2 o'clock. A little worried about traffic. I know the pre-show they had the Battle Royal and the crappy 4-way tag team match.
Yeah,
I'm not being bad.
No, it wasn't horrible.
But those were on the pre-show, and the pre-show was supposed to start at 2. The first match didn't go on until 3. It was hot as balls early, but then you know the shade came and everybody was good. But yeah, man, it's just you know WrestleMania is just one of those things. Like it's a spectacle and. I was worried because the last couple of Manias that I've been to, New York, Atlanta, Arizona, I can't think of the numbers right off the top of my head, all suck. First WrestleMania I ever went to was WrestleMania in Hollywood exactly 10 years ago. And that was my favorite WrestleMania until this past weekend. That shit was real and amazing.
Yo, how were you when you saw NWO DX? I mean,
I was 14. I'm locked out. Yo, I spat. Look. First of all, to see Sting come out was a moment.
Yo, he was thin up top, though. Like, he needed to let it go. He needed to go back to the crew cut. It.
Yeah, Sting's hair is a failure.
Yeah.
But to see Sting come out was a moment in itself. Even though I don't get the little Asian drum.
I didn't understand that either. Was that even his music? I don't
know. It was, but it was weird, right?
Yeah, I don't
know. But,
I didn't like that.
The entrance was great, but then Triple H, even though the costume was ridiculous, I felt like Triple H was going to throw the shovel at Sting that right. You know, he was going to bury him one way or another.
Yeah.
And I know on Twitter, somebody was like, yo, you got to give Triple H credit. He puts people over. I was like, I just don't feel like he's going to do it tonight. So Sting losing wasn't a big deal because of all the other bullshit that happened along the way. DX coming out, lost my shit. NWO coming up, lost my shit again. Shawn Michaels came out, I just threw shit. I was just like, I was marking out. I was going nuts. I was waiting for Ric Flair to come out. Because I felt like Ric Flair was retired by Shawn Michaels. Ric Flair was WCW. And Triple H kind of sunned him on Raw. So it only would have made sense for Flair to come out and be involved in it.
Yeah.
And somebody was like, yo, but Ric Flair and Sting were enemies. Yeah, but so was the NWO. It's not like Sting was tight with them.
Exactly.
Before that Wolfpack bullshit, which was bullshit. But Flair would have
came out. I used to like the Wolfpack.
I hated the Wolfpack. I thought that shit was so contrived, man. That shit was so lame. I know people was like, yo, Wolfpack with Conan and the red and black. Fuck that. It was... When the NWO was like 5 people, that's when it was great. But seeing all that was amazing.
What was your favorite fight of the night? I mean, you're there, so you have a different perspective than everything. And it doesn't even have to be, you know, like technical. Because obviously, you know, the Rollins-Orton match technically was probably
RKO?
The best. They say best ever. I might agree.
It's up there. And here's why. Because at first I was like, nah, the Evan Bourne one, when he popped up off the bat and he hit him in that shooting star press was amazing. However... It took 2 people to tango with this RKO. The fact that Seth Rollins put his foot on Randy Orton's neck, his sweaty, slippery neck, and both of them worked together to boost Rollins up in the air, and then Rollins had to kick his legs back to lay flat for Orton to catch him in this RKO, yeah, it might be the best RKO.
Rollins, the best sell. Just
Ziggler's up there, too.
Oh, Ziggler was great. I mean, even in the ladder match. Like, yeah. Just
Ziggler, that dude could sell his ass off.
Yeah, Ziggler. But I mean, Rollins is amazing. They'll put that belt on him sooner or later.
Eventually.
The IC, you know.
Yeah, but going back to the best match, I mean, as soon as Brock Lesnar signed, I had a feeling we're going to have something good with Reigns and Lesnar. And I said earlier, I was like, as soon as Rollins lost, I was like, he lost and he lost early. There's a chance he could cash in. As the night progressed, I was like, yo, we only have a few minutes left. I don't think he's going to cash in. This motherfucker cashed in with like 10 minutes left in this show. After these two have literally destroyed each other in a way that made Lesnar look strong, Reigns not look weak. He just took everything he had and laughed at it. But then Rollins came in at the perfect time, cashed in, made this thing a triple threat match. Yo,
It was literally perfect.
The arena went nuts for it.
It was perfect because he didn't have to pin Brock.
Nope.
Which is the key, because no one's pinning Brock.
And let's talk about the spear that Brock ate by Reigns when he had Rollins in the F5.
Oh, Reigns. Beautiful. I mean, stealing the show. I mean, great. Rollins did great. Both matches, nice. Reigns stole the show.
I don't know if he stole the show.
He wrestled better than anyone thought he can wrestle. He got beat up for like 20 minutes.
He got ragdolled by Lesnar, which was brilliant.
When was the last time you thought Reigns can wrestle for 20 minutes?
Well, I mean,
regardless of getting beat up or not.
Yo, I can get my ass kicked for 20 minutes. I wouldn't like it, but I can get my ass kicked. Yo, Lesnar ragdolled
Reigns. He's not the junkyard dog. Like, let's get this real. Like, he did his thing. When it was time for him to hit his moves, he did it in a convincing way that made you look like, yo, he's legit. Like, he can hurt Brock a little bit, and it made it believable.
Let's be clear about one thing, too. I don't know if the arena captured it, but Reigns got the most boos of the night by far.
He needs to be a heel. I mean, but now there's too many. Like, he can't be a heel against Rollins.
There's not really too many heels, because the Shield reuniting would be great right now.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
SummerSlam, it might be too early, but let's just say Survivor Series, Shield reunites against Lesnar. Great. But Reigns will be fine as a face. For now, I don't know if he's ever going to get over with the fans because they force him down the throat. I think they're just going to have to let him beat up some other people right now. Let Orton and Rollins have their program for the next two pay-per-views and figure it out. But the heat that Reigns got, yo, nobody was cheering for him. It was rough. But then, you know, it was booked perfectly. The match was booked perfectly.
Yeah.
And the next night on Raw, Reigns still got booed out of the building. It just didn't matter anymore.
No, I mean, like you said, if the Shield came back, that'd be... I mean, it'd be perfect. Just have them all healed. I'd put a belt on every one of them.
You know the craziest thing?
I'd have Reigns beat Cena.
Because
if you want to build a star, you have him beat Cena. He goes over on Cena. I mean, Cena's
that's true.
The ultimate face.
Unless they have a shitty match, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's probably going to be shit, but it is what it is.
Right.
You could beat up on Cena.
Right.
And then you have Ambrose beat DB, and then you have Reigns beat Orton a couple times, and at SummerSlam, all three of them, and Brock comes back and just F5s everyone. The Monday night before SummerSlam, you know, it'd be on.
The crazy thing about this is that when the Shield broke up, the last person who I thought would need the Shield to reunite was Dean Ambrose. And now I feel like Dean Ambrose needs it more than the other two.
Yeah, definitely. He's caught in a little bit of a limbo.
He's in a weird place right now.
I wouldn't mind him, Ziggler, Sheamus, and... You
know, ridiculous-looking Sheamus, by the way.
Oh, yeah, it was horrible-looking.
Ridiculous.
I mean, it is what it is. I think Sheamus has been ridiculous-looking for quite some time.
Well, yeah.
He just got worse.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you throw DB in there and just have them all battle it out for the IC title for a little while. I wouldn't mind that.
Isn't Ambrose a natural heel, though?
Yeah. I mean, he's just...
Why is he still
face? But he's likable, though. Like, that's the problem.
He can be a tweener, but Ambrose is naturally a dastardly bastard.
Yeah,
like, when you see him, he just looks like he'd rape your daughter.
Yeah, like, but that's why they have to put him against Bryan. Everyone against Bryan is a heel.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, there's not too many heels.
No, it's true.
And even if him and Ziggler battle out for a second and let Sheamus get a little bit of shine and then they come and throw him in, I'm not hating on that.
The bottom line is everything's looking up like it does after every WrestleMania.
Yep.
However, the one person who's not looking up, and I'm still pissed, and I said on the last podcast he should have won, was Rusev. Rusev losing to Cena did nothing for Rusev, and add the fact that it looks like they're separating Lana from Rusev makes it look even worse.
That's worse, but I think we're going to see them back together. And I
hope so.
Rumor alert, even though by the time this podcast drops, you might have concrete, proof of this. Mm. But Rusev is supposed to go at Cena again, Extreme Rules.
Yeah, I think it's going to happen.
I'm not mad at that. Let him win the title back.
Yeah, I think he should win the title. And I think, but see, I get why he didn't win at WrestleMania. I just want to see it happen. I get it's like USA, like, dude. Cena caused so much heat. There were people chanting USA and booing Cena. Like, they just didn't care. It was just like, USA, John Cena, boo! I was cheering for Rusev. If Putin would have walked in the building, I would have cheered for him. I was not cheering for John Cena that night. And so, it was fun. It was a good match. I just wish Rusev could have went over because we need, like, a monster heel right now. And Rusev being undefeated was just great for the WWE as a whole.
All right, so... You guys, stay with us. Our guest is coming in next. He had way better seats. He was right there, third row. He was right behind Rousey, and everyone wants to be right behind Ronda Rousey.
That dude had great seats, and he got to hang out with Wale, which is better than what I did.
Way better.
Indeed, indeed. Oh, yeah, and you follow us on Twitter. My Twitter's @AndreasHell. Very simple.
at Kel Dansby. Once again, we got the most simple Twitters in the world.
Of all time.
You guys better find us. Stay Indeed. Tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Corner. We're joined by our guest.
Hey, what's up, man? It's your boy, Kaz. You can find me on Twitter, at RealLifeKaz. I run thestash.com. I'm a big wrestling nerd, amongst other things. What's good, people?
Kaz, what up, man? It's Andreas. You're part of the Wrestle Rap family. Yes. So, you know, we kind of got you here because it's WrestleMania season. We were both down there, and I don't know how the hell we ain't see each other. But,
Yeah, man, it was a wild couple of days. I'm still kind of recovering from it.
So first things first, man, I want to talk about Wale Mania, because I didn't get a chance to go. I ended up being drunk in some bar in San Francisco. So talk about that night a little bit and how it went down, because it just sounded like it was some craziness out there.
Yeah, man, Wale Mania was kind of insane. You know, obviously, it was going to be insane regardless, but, you know, added with the you know, the variable of the tragedy that happened with Rey Mysterio and Perro, you know, those last things that was up in the air, whether Rey was even going to make it or, you know, who was going to come. So, like, you know, instead of it just being all about Rey, you know, a bunch of people who just happened to be in town, we just kind of turned it into, like, this big, support system for Rey, because, you know, he's still kind of going through it with everything that he's been through in the past couple of weeks. So, you know, besides Rey just coming out, Dave Meltzer came by, Jim Ross, obviously Conan and Cort Bauer and MSL, MVP showed up, Samoa Joe, Jeff Hardy, James Storm, damn, who else? Chris Hero came. Man, it was a who's who of wrestlers at that night, and it was a fun time. I think Victoria was in there twerking on the stage. Noel Foley came through with Frank the Clown. Yeah, I think Brooke Hogan was in there lurking. Like, it was pretty tight, man. It was a tight event.
So, dude, for those who don't know, you know, talk about the connection between Wale and wrestling, because Wale Mania, there's some cats that be like, yo, why is Wale at a wrestling joint? Like, why is he at WrestleMania? Is this some promotional thing? But that's not the case. So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, man. You know, a lot of times when the WWE, like, kind of gets involved with an artist or something like that, it's usually, like, some long-winded plan or, you know, it's some type of business deal or something like that. Well, this isn't the case at all, man. Wale is just a huge, huge mark. That's basically what it is. You know, he loves the art. He loves, you know, not just the WWE. Like, he loves the indies. He loves New Japan. He loves, you know, anybody that... You know, anybody, he really is, you know, him being a sports fan, he can appreciate the athletic variable that it takes to be a great professional wrestler. So he is involved in, you know, he likes a lot of the storyline stuff, but he's way more interested in, like, the athletic achievements of, say, a Dolph Ziggler or Daniel Bryan, or, you know, he loves guys who can work, you know, he loves... Obviously, he's become really good friends with guys like Wuha Nation and Ricochet, or Prince Puma, as he's called in Lucha Underground, and, you know, Rich Swann, and, you know, just these awesome, supremely gifted athletic guys. He's gotten extremely close with Enzo Amore and Finn Balor from NXT. You know, those guys are just amazing people, and it's like a big mutual admiration society because they dig his music and he digs their talent, you know. So it's just him being a fan and just loving to be a part of, you know, what they got going on and just, you know, being in that mix.
Yo, what'd you see this weekend that was just, like, crazy? We want to give people really the insight behind the scenes. Like, it's cool, and, you know, we saw the fights, we saw the events. What went down when you went to Mania? How was the crowd? How was the atmosphere? What was that like for you and just being in the building?
Because Kaz had Kaz had the dope seats, first and foremost. this dude's over here putting stuff on Instagram, like, looks off straight off the telecast, while everybody else is, like, 50 miles from the field. So Kaz had a better view than everybody in the goddamn house that night.
I ain't gonna lie, man. You know, I got super lucky because, you know, I went through the proper channels with the WWE press and, you know, getting there. And you would think that they would give us some pretty sweet seats, but, you know, they pretty much put us all the way up in the press row, which, you know, if you're there to watch a football game, isn't so bad. But when you're there to watch a wrestling event, you know, you're pretty much watching mice run around and hit each other. So, you know, I knew Wale was going to be there. My man Emilio Sparks was there also. And, you know, Wale had gotten some tickets from WWE, and he had bought a few as well. So he was really close to the action. And I think we were in the third row, like right behind Ronda Rousey. And, you know, we were like in the friends and family section, which was quite odd, given Wale's current status with the actual WWE, but we'll get to that later. he sat like right next to Linda McMahon and Triple H's parents, and, you know, we saw Ronda Rousey and the Four Horsemen, you know, her clique of badass chicks come through the crowd, and, you know, a lot of the things, like a lot of the people that like hopped through the crowd or hopped through the event, like walked right past us, you know, so we kind of had an idea what was going to happen before it happened. So, for example, during the match with Triple H versus Sting, you know, I guess when the NWO came out and DX came out and they're all like squaring off, fucking, I just see, you know, Shawn Michaels just like scoot right behind me. I'm like, I started tweeting. I'm like, oh shit, it's about to be lit. Shawn Michaels just walked behind me. Not even 30 seconds later, he hops the gate and kicks Sting's face off. And we're like, oh my God, this is intense. This is insane, you know. And, you know, it was a typical Mania crowd, man. Like, you know, they were into pretty much everything. There wasn't really a lull. As far as, like, you know, match quality, I'm sure it could have been, you know, the matches itself were great. But I feel like everybody was emotionally invested in every single match, but there wasn't really any downtime. Even the talking segments that you would think you'd be able to, like, go catch a quick bathroom break. Like, I could imagine some people, when Triple H and Stephanie came out to gloat after he won or whatever, or talk about the attendance record, I've seen a lot of people head up the stairs to, you know, either catch a drink or, like, go to the bathroom or something. And then The Rock comes out. And speaking of which, The Rock's mom is sitting right in front of us, so that's all I'm saying. Don't go anywhere. The Rock is definitely here because that's his mom. And then, you know, The Rock's music hits, and I just see a wave of people sprint back to their seats. And, you know, it was insane. And, you know, once Stephanie said her line about, oh, what are you going to do, hit a girl or whatever? So we all started chanting for Ronda's name. And then all the camera guys started, like, walking towards Ronda, and, like, they got to set up for the shot that, you know, he eventually panned towards her and started looking at her, and then she hopped the rail. And, man, it was really crazy just to see everything kind of unfold, you know, before the show, after the show. I know Wale and Emilio kicked it with, like, Daniel Bryan and Enzo and Cesaro afterwards. I think it was one of the better WrestleManias, so I think everybody was kind of in great spirits, and everybody had a good time.
Yo, I feel like Andres was in the nosebleeds compared to you. Like,
I mean, you can't even
come
see
on, man,
it.
Don't
yo.
Just me like that. Look.
I mean, yeah, dude, I got super lucky. I saw Dave Shoemaker. He was like adjacent from me, so Bill Simmons. They like two rows back. I think Rosenberg or Smoke Dizzle was around there. Us also.
Yo, you see how he said that though? Hold on, he was like, "They're two rows back." He made sure we know. Like, nah, they weren't with me. They were two rows back. Just so we know, you got it like that.
Nah, but yeah, man, it was probably the best wrestling experience that I've ever been to. I mean, freaking Triple H came in and he tossed his bottle. He tossed it right in front of this little kid that was sitting in front of me. I wasn't gonna be all Dame Dash and try and grab the bottle because, you know, what man acts like another man trying to grab another man's water, you know what I'm saying? So I let that just fall. And yeah, it was really awesome, man. And Cena's hat fell into our section too. We were right in the hard camera, view. So I guess, you know, when Cena does his pose and Triple H does his big old spit thing, we were like in that section. So it was really dope.
Yeah, I mean, I was jealous, man. I wanted to go punch you in the face. I mean, I had good seats. I paid for mine. Like I'm a fan. Like, at the end of the day, going to those, sitting in the press box, this is not for me. I got to see the action, right? So,
exactly.
So, you know, I know what it's like when you get to be a fan at one of these events and don't have to do that. But fuck all that. Let's talk about WrestleMania itself. And for you, because you've been around this thing for a while, I've been to quite a few of them. As a whole, like looking back, now that we're removed a few days, where does this rank in the WrestleManias that you've seen in your lifetime in person?
I've got to say, it's right at the top. I mean, you know, as far as, it was probably the most well-booked WrestleMania it ranks right up there with X7, as far as like one of the best well-booked WrestleManias of the 2000s. You know, I'm still kind of like well removed from like the 90s era, and you know, everything's just kind of a blur then. But like, as far as like the stadium shows, and you know, I feel like once WrestleMania moved into these big football stadiums, they kind of had to get their bearings and have to like really interact with everybody, especially in the open air crowd, like the like Levi's Stadium. Because sometimes that could kind of like take away from, you know, the impact of certain moments. Like,
I thought it did, yo. Like the Undertaker moment, I thought it like. It didn't feel the same. It was dope, and he came out. But
it was still bright out.
Yeah,
like the light hues. Like you couldn't really notice when like he did his whole eyes roll in the back of his head thing, and you know the lights come on, and you know it didn't have the same exact impact that it was in the dark. You know, so I think last year, you know, if this year's WrestleMania had the same exact card, but took place in the Superdome, which is closed, and you know, in Louisiana, and you know, it could all the crowd noise could reverberate off the dome like that. I think it would have came off. I'm not saying it didn't come off great. I think it came off great anyway, but I feel like it would have came off like 10 times better, just because I feel like this year's show was the better show, just pound for pound. I mean, Randy Orton and Seth Rollins set it off pretty crazy with that incredible RKO that he took. The ladder match is pretty dope with Daniel Bryan and Dolph Ziggler fucking going headbutt for headbutt at the top of the ladder, which is like pretty tight. And you know, Lesnar's Lesnar, man. Like he's a freaking nature, and he's like TV doesn't like he looks big on TV, but like real life doesn't do him justice just of how massive a human being this guy is. Because Roman Reigns is a big guy. And he's tossing him around like he's a little girl.
Yo, he looked like a 12-year-old.
Yeah, like he's tossing him around like he's a 12-year-old, you know what I'm saying? So, like, just, like, Lesnar is worth the price of admission anywhere you go. And, you know, Cena and Russo was pretty good. Cena bust out that springboard stunner a la Jay Lethal. I thought that was pretty tight.
Yeah.
You know, it was a good show, man. Even the Divas match was pretty good, you know. That's usually a safe happen, right? But, you know, Nikki Bella is, like, if I could give out an award for probably, like, the most improved wrestler, like, Nikki Bella is right at the top, you know. And people probably think I'm trolling by that, but, like, her work has been, like, pretty outstanding. Just to be, like, a slimy heel and being able to actually work and go with, you know, Jay, who can really go like AJ Lee or Paige or any of these other girls, you know? So it was a great, great WrestleMania. I'll put it maybe a slight notch under X7, just because X7 still does it as a nostalgia factor and being at the height of WWE's mega superpowers that it had at that one point. You know, I don't think they'll ever come and touch the pop culture membership that they had at that point. But I would say WrestleMania 31 came pretty damn close to matching that.
Yo, if you had to choose one match that was just the match of the night, like everything was perfect, the vibe, the work in the ring, everything, what was that match for you?
You know, I've been wrestling with that. That's kind of a tough one because, you know, it's easy to go with the ladder match because, you know, there's stunts and, you know, but once you break it down, it wasn't really a technical masterpiece like that. But I would say if I had to pick one, I mean, like, at least you have a nitpicker. You know what I mean? Like, I'd love to see the Rusev match. I think the ending could have been a little better, you know. I loved Rollins and Orton. I think they could have went a lot longer, but, you know, obviously, you know, Rollins is going to come back out and cash in that night. I think Lesnar and Reigns delivered, you know. Like, I think, you know, they made Roman look strong, and they accomplished him coming off still legitimate badass, still not ready to be the guy yet. And, you know, I think the ending with Rollins cashing in and becoming the champ kind of wrapped everything up in a nice little bow. It still made Lesnar look like a juggernaut without losing the title. It made Roman Reigns look like a badass for being able to take out most of the assholes. And it gives somebody for Roman to chase, because obviously we all know he's going to be the guy eventually. But, you know, I would say if I had to pick, I would just go with the main event with Lesnar and Reigns, and eventually Rollins joining that.
Good pick. Let me ask you this, dude. Should Sting have lost?
Should Sting have lost? Yeah. Absolutely Sting should have lost.
You're an asshole. You're an asshole. But go ahead and tell me why.
Absolutely Sting should have lost. Here's the thing, man. Like, if we're being like, you know, obviously, you know, I'm a part of the IWC and we're supposed to hate Triple H, but less than a year ago, he puts on damn near a 5-star classic with somebody who's probably the best wrestler on the planet, a year removed from fighting anybody, and Daniel Bryan, you know what I'm saying? Like, Triple H, he could brawl with the Brock Lesnars. He could do the 6-man tag with the Evolutions. And then he puts on the technical masterpiece of Daniel Bryan. And he's supposed to lose to Sting, who hasn't wrestled against anybody worth a damn in, like, what, 5 years?
Sting's been out of it for a second. And finally, yeah, someone here who has sense.
And if we're thinking about it, I mean, like, even at Sting's, as much as we want to give Triple H shit, even at Sting's prime, was he ever as good as an in-ring worker as Triple H?
Never.
I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Easy, never. I'll say it, never.
Huh?
Easy. He was never as good as Triple H. At his prime, he was never as good.
He was never as good. He was probably a bigger character. He's probably a bigger draw. He was definitely a bigger moneymaker than Triple H. But as far as a worker, you know, no way in hell. He wasn't in Triple H's league. My thing is, you know, Sting, you got to give something for the people to chase. You know what I'm saying? Like, if Sting comes in after, you know, I guess in WWE term, after 15 years of not being seen and just kills Triple H, what does that make Triple H look like? You know what I'm saying? There has to be something to get Sting to come back. And I obviously don't think that they're done with Sting. He still looks like he had a lot of gas up in his tank for special events and special moments. But at the same time, he's got to be able to... got to be able to give us that story, you know? And Triple H hasn't beat anybody in a long time. He's always, you know, kind of faltered in these high-profile matches. So, you know, the Shield beat him in Evolution down, and Daniel Bryan made him tap out, and, I don't know, he pinned him or whatever. And, you know, Brock Lesnar whipped his ass. So he had to get something, you know? And, you know, if there's anything we know about Triple H, he knows how to, you know, let the get back happen. So I'm willing to wait to see where this Triple H thing goes, and I'm pretty sure that's not the end of it, even though they shook hands and everything was all hunky-dory at the end.
All right, two last questions, Kaz. One, how long is it going to take before the WWE fucks this up and we go back to having apathy and being upset? So, because you know how it goes. After Mania, we get geeked up, and then about a month and a half later, we're all pissed off again.
I was about to say, it usually takes a solid 2 weeks after that Mania crowd leaves. And, you know, a lot of people get gassed off of the Raw after Manias, and that's why they do all those big views there, because it's not just, okay, San Jose is a good crowd. It's like, no, these are wrestling fans from all across the world, so they're going to be geeked for anything, you know what I'm saying? So I would say a good 2 weeks before we're back complaining about everything. You know, I think Randy Orton and Seth Rollins is the next program for the world title, and I don't know, man. I guess all it takes for me is to watch New Day perform, and I'll be right back to being pissed off at those guys.
Yeah. And the last one before we get you out of here, bro, is out of Mania. Even though there were a lot of winners in Mania, and even though Rollins lost, he comes away with the title. Even though, you know, some of these guys look strong, who was the biggest loser at WrestleMania in terms of where the hell do you take their character after this?
Man, the biggest loser, I would have to say, damn, that's a good-ass question. I would probably say, I would have to go with Rusev.
Yep.
You know, Rusev was probably, like, the biggest heel, baddest heel going right now. And, you know, him losing the way he did was kind of anticlimactic, who they all would knock down Lana and, you know, whatever. So, like, if he continues to chase Cena, and, you know, if I was them and I really wanted to get that heat back. I was about to go right back over to like the very next pay-per-view, just on some slimy shit. And just, you know, there aren't that many heels that are like legitimate, you know, threats to anybody. You know what I'm saying? Like every heel in the game right now is like a slimy heel. Like Rollins has J&J Security here, the big Joe and Kane are the Authority. But like Rusev was just a heel because he just whipped everyone's ass and he didn't like America. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So he didn't really cheat. He wasn't really like a backstabbing kind of guy. I like my heels to be heels because they win all the time and they just beat the piss out of you. So if they could keep, you know, Rusev looking like that, you know, maybe he won't be my biggest loser. But I just have my doubts with Super Cena holding that title and how he tends to make people look or anybody look as he chases them.
Nah, dope. Thanks for joining us, Kaz. Thanks for telling everybody that you just had way more amazing seats than Andreas, because you know he just talked up his whole experience. You had to come in and crush it.
Yo, that's a dickhead move. Why do you do me like that? Goddamn.
It was like Snoop stepping on the building.
I had to flex for the wrestling community real fast, dog.
No doubt. Well, Kaz, I'm going to catch you in the Wrestle Rap chat, you know what I'm saying, in a little bit, probably if you get off this podcast. But yeah, man, handle yours. Good talking to you, brother, and we'll have you on the show again in the future.
Anytime, man, anytime. I love you guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks. All right, everyone, stay tuned. Make sure you guys keep listening. We're talking MMA, more Ronda Rousey, and the notorious Conor McGregor when we come back.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the corner. We're joined by our next guest,
Wonder Woman.
That's it. One word. No other introduction needed. One word.
Did you bring your truth lasso with you?
I did, but I gave it to Kel because he needed more things for the setup here, so he's currently got it plugged into his microphone.
Wonder Woman, can you reveal your true identity for people, please?
It's Heidi Fang here from the Fight Corner on Fox Sports 670. I was just messing around.
We're breaking all the rules. Like, secret identities are out. You know, Justice League are going to have problems with us.
This is some bullshit. Everybody's got, like, some super... Everybody's stunting today, right? Like, everybody wants to stunt today. We got Wonder Woman with the truth lasso. We got Kaz and his stuntage. That's a bunch of nonsense. But let's talk... We got to talk some MMA, right?
Yeah, we're talking MMA. The first thing, I guess, since we're transitioning from WrestleMania, talking Ronda Rousey, her press tour... Pretty much, she's going everywhere in the past week. What do you make of that? Do you think she's going to be around for long? I don't know. She's a hot commodity.
She is a hot commodity, very much so. A huge draw right now. Fast Furious premiere is happening today. She's Instagramming all over the place from Hollywood, from red carpets. You can't stop this woman. What she does is incredible. She's really one of the few athletes of the sport that's just transcended it. And it's hard to put a value on that for the UFC and to see if, in fact, she will stick around. At this rate, it's looking maybe 4 years. I don't know. She signed that multi-year deal. That is inked. So
you can retire, though.
There's always a way out.
Anderson Silva had a 10-fight deal, right?
Yeah. I mean,
there's always a way to bail yourself out, right? Fail a drug test. Do something you could bail yourself out. But no, seriously, though, I mean, I just saw Furious 7 last night, and... Looking at Ronda in IMAX, I was like, "Yo,
when does that come out?" By the way,
I mean it'll be out the day this podcast goes up, so I don't want to date the podcast.
Like, okay, I'm just wondering that you just had to, you know, shameless plug. You had to come in and get your stuff on.
What's wrong with that? Look,
listen. Anyway, they put you in the nosebleeds. Don't worry about it, man. Get your shot.
This is gonna be an ongoing thing, right? This is some.
Get your shot. I wasn't there.
But if when you look at Ronda and you look at Furious 7, you look at the star power that woman has. And then she goes out there and just destroys somebody in 14 seconds. In an Instagram video, she's destroying people in Instagram videos. It makes you really wonder, like, unless the UFC can develop another person not named Cyborg as a formidable opponent, is there really a reason for her to stick around?
It's like everybody thought this Holly Holm thing was going to pan out. Her first fight didn't look so hot. You know, there's been times, and even in the boxing world, where she's... I guess slumped a little bit, had a little bit of issues in some fights. So I don't know if she'll come around and maybe have the octagon jitter shook off or whatever that might have been.
I mean, you can't get past that judo. I mean, with Ronda, the bottom line is she's head and shoulders above of everybody else when it comes to grappling.
most women that are coming around in MMA are very one-dimensional. Like, Carla Esparza is a great wrestler, but she wasn't a great striker, and we saw what happened. Ronda's getting very well-rounded, but the judo toss, the hip toss is, like, unstable. It's like a finishing move, like John Cena's move. Like, you're not going to kick out of it. Like, once she tosses you to the ground, gets that arm, it's a wrap. There's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, nah, no one's stopping that. I mean, Triple H saw that over the weekend. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't stop the judo throw.
Nah, and Triple H weighs, what, like 300 pounds, and he got judo tossed? Like, like it was nothing.
He shouldn't have come out with that Terminator mask. That's what happened.
Yeah. That was the end of it for him. Yeah. I mean, once we saw that, we didn't see anything else.
No, we didn't. And I mean, but when you see Heidi, is there a chance that Ronda actually wrestles in the WWE? You think Dana would allow Ronda Rousey to wrestle?
If it could put over a women's main event in the UFC to over a million buys, like we're talking Brock Lesnar power, mm-hmm. I don't see why he wouldn't.
Is there, I mean, honestly, what's the danger? Is there any danger in letting her do this?
Well, you know, like we saw WrestleMania, right? And Brock actually did cut open his head. Mm-hmm. So there could be some kind of things that it could actually happen, you know, whether intended or not. But I think if you play a safe enough script, I'm sorry, it's not scripted. No, but if you did something,
thank you.
Keep it safe, you know, put her around a bunch of padded, you know, judo fighters or something, some, I don't know, sumo guys, something like that. I don't know. I'm just throwing things out there.
Yeah, I mean, she's something Dana's never had. He's never had this problem. Mm-hmm. As good as everyone else was, and you know, Randy did movies and Rampage after, for a second.
After.
Like, no one's done this in their prime.
Right.
You've never had to worry about this before. And to be honest, I mean, we saw GSP walk away because he had enough money. And it was just like, why do I have to keep doing this?
Well, I think more importantly with Ronda, I think if you're Dana, you just let her do whatever the hell she wants to do.
Keep her happy.
Yeah, let her be happy because it's not going to hurt your bottom line. The UFC is still at a point where there are a lot of people who don't watch it because they have a perception of what it is, right? But everybody knows who Ronda Rousey is. And if you see Ronda Rousey in a movie, or if you see Ronda Rousey in the WWE, if you see Ronda Rousey driving a race car or flying to the moon, because let's be honest, you could probably do them all, right, at the same day, it'll make you want to see the fight. Like, Tyson was an enigma. Ronda is reaching that level. She's an enigma. There's nobody else like her in the MMA, period, right now.
How much does it hurt if she loses?
Ah.
No, it's the ultimate hypothetical, by the way.
Yeah, in the foreseeable future, only person that maybe got close was Misha. But then again, that was after a period of time when Ronda had been out. She had been on a hiatus. She even said she felt a little rusty. She had that knee issue. As soon as Ronda said she had that knee scope and she felt a lot better in her hand with the knuckle problem, mm-hmm. I knew Kat was in trouble. Nothing like 100% healthy Ronda Rousey to just say, yeah, I'm over the top right now. But when you look at the overall picture, I think that she needs that kind of challenge to continue being on top. And that's what keeps her there, is having set the bar higher and higher each time. I mean, next time she's going to fit her fight into a vine.
Yeah, it's going to be a quick trip to Brazil.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, this Brazil fight, I mean, is like, Brazilians are going to probably cheer for her because nobody has a chance to beat this girl right now. Unless it's like some kind of crazy fluke. And all right, I don't want to sound bad when I say this, but women don't have the same one-punch knockout power that men do. So it changes the dynamic of when Ronda Rousey fights. When Mike Tyson was fighting, there were other men that could hit like Mike Tyson. With Ronda, it's not about offensive, you know, firepower that could put her away with one punch. The fact that nobody can really hurt her and stop her in one punch makes it less likely that anybody's going to ever beat her. And I say ever, and I'm like, for real, like ever? Forever, ever? Ever.
I think that's the appeal of Cyborg, though. I mean, Cyborg can come in at 175 and she gets, you know, she catches Ronda with the equivalent of the Marquez, and Ronda just walks into one and it hits her in the chin, and then all you think you need is some ground and pound. Just make it look ugly. You can't protect yourself. The ref is stopping you. You don't got to knock people out cold in the UFC.
Yeah.
You just got to hit them a lot without them blocking.
I just want to switch divisions and say that Angela Hill fought Muay Thai and was undefeated and does have one punch knockout power, but she's a strawweight.
Right.
I'll put Angela, you on later.
Yeah. Yeah. Angela, you're right. Angela Hill, you're absolutely right.
Dropping knowledge.
Yeah, but Angela was knocking people out. I watched a lot of highlight videos. But then she's not well-rounded enough. Like, there's a lot of things you have to have going your way to become a threat to somebody like Ronda Rousey.
Yeah.
Like, Kat Zingano's a tough girl, and she got mauled. probably because she had a shitty game plan. But, you know, what can you do? I mean, obviously she thought she was doing the right things. You know, I'm going to do a flying knee, but I know what I'm doing out here. Did she think she was going to get flipped over and tapped in a matter of seconds? No, but every time we see Ronda fight, it's like a new trick.
In EA Sports UFC, I beat Ronda Rousey with the flying knee from Kat Zingano, so it does work. But it doesn't. Exactly.
This is where the game plan came from. Inside information.
Only in video games and pro wrestling. You have to script this stuff in order for it to happen.
Well, let's talk about another future UFC star, and that's Conor McGregor.
Future.
The Notorious.
Future.
I mean, future. He has to win. He has to win. You can't be a star in my book. You can't be a superstar without a belt.
Heidi, is he a star already?
I used to be very hesitant. I was very much like Kel, maybe, you know, right before his last fight here in Las Vegas. And then I saw the Irish crowd at the weigh-in. And these people have been following him his entire career and since Cage Warriors. And when they find out that Conor McGregor is somewhere, what happens? Look at UFC Embedded this past, the last episode that just happened in Dublin. 71,000 people at a press conference.
Right.
They were like stacked in there. It looked like something that you've seen on one of those like 30 for 30s where people die coming out of the soccer stadium because the great hit them. You know, it was like crazy to see. And that's just a press conference. Imagine Croke Park. In 6 months, if the big if, but Aldo is the beast. He's the legitimate Scarface. Yeah, I'm gonna put it there.
So Heidi, he's a star.
Yeah, he's a star.
He needs the belt. I mean, it's all great. It's
he's
all hype.
A star
until you have the belt. I mean, I can't do it. If he loses to Aldo, then what?
Then he's not a star. But right now, Conor McGregor is a star.
How quick your stars fade on you?
No, yeah, they do.
Shooting star.
it's like boxing. You take an L. MMA is a little bit more forgiving in the loss column. But you take an L. Yes, your star takes a hit. Remember, Buster Douglas knocked out Mike Tyson, got a Sega Genesis video game, and got flattened by Evander Holyfield. We ain't heard from Buster since.
He didn't even get a Wheaties box.
He's like 400 pounds right now. Somewhere.
Speaking of Wheaties boxes, Anthony Pettis.
Oh, that's someone whose star is dimmed quickly.
My sister doesn't follow MMA. She saw the thing in the store. She texted me all excited. Look, they put a UFC guy on a cereal box. Isn't this cool? I was like, yeah, he lost that belt.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as the box, like, I have the cereal box, and I'm like, I might as well eat it, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's not a collector's item anymore. I might as well go ahead and eat this Wheaties box. It don't even matter anymore.
It'll hold on to it for the comeback. It could be worth millions later.
But then it's not the same. What if he gets a different haircut or something? Just,
like, yeah.
You gotta have new tattoos on his face.
The mystique is gone. And Connor's going to run into the same problem. I mean, I was picking Connor, you know, to win the fight. We got months for me to change my mind back and forth. But... you know, I thought Aldo was lazy in his last couple fights, and like Conor said, he's a decision machine, and I don't see it this way. Like, you just made a lazy person mad. Like, just let him be. Like, let him be lazy. Go in there and kick him in the face. But instead, he made him mad. We're going to see the best Aldo we've seen in years.
And one thing I noticed about Conor in this past few fights, I've been watching him because I'm a nerd like that over and over to kind of study and analyze things, but... it's not checking kicks. You're not checking kicks against a guy like Aldo. Ooh, you're in trouble.
That front leg is out there, too.
Yeah.
I mean, Conor's wide stance allows somebody to get easy access to that front leg, and nobody's actually utilized it against him yet. One thing that Conor does is he controls distance very well. But Aldo covers distance well with that leg kick, and he hurts that lead leg quickly. But let's go back a little bit. Heidi, we sat down with Conor and Jose about a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
We listened to both of them talk. And I asked Jose, I asked Conor, do you believe that Jose is not taking this fight as big as his previous fights? Do you believe Jose is really looking at this as just another fight?
Not anymore. If he was at the beginning of the tour, because we were day two?
Yeah,
of that tour,
mm-hmm.
and you go through the next 10 cities in 8 days of being around that and the constant in your face, I think now, if anything, he's definitely, especially with that belt grab at the Dublin press conference.
I think the touch in the back of the neck was like... oh, it's like, all right, yeah, we're ready to go.
He's so disrespectful.
So disrespectful. Like, how you just, you know, it's so like, oh, first thing I thought of was Bane when he just came and laid his hand on him. Like, do you feel in charge? Like, it's like that. Like, he hit him with that.
He's lucky it wasn't me. I'm like that kid Warren, and there's something about Mary. You touch the back of my head, you get, like, smacked in. So, like, yeah.
Yeah, it's just so much disrespect. And, I mean, it's a lot to live up to. And Dana looked like he was enjoying every second of it.
I mean, he's selling more and more pay-per-views every time Conor opens his mouth. Jose is not selling this pay-per-view. This is the Conor McGregor show.
He doesn't sell any pay-per-view.
No, and I love Jose Aldo. I think he's an amazing fighter. I don't think he's the same wrecking ball he was in the WEC. I think he's been pacing himself a lot more in fights. I do think he's been defending his title more than attacking and trying to get finishes. However, with somebody like Conor McGregor, who is offense first, and pissing him off is only going to cause more trouble for him in the long run. I don't think it's going to take Jose out of his game. I think he's that disciplined where he knows what he has to do on that night. And I think, you know, my only concern is what happens when Conor catches him. Because Conor's proven that he's got the debilitating knockout power. Mm-hmm. Like, he can hurt you bad. But I don't know. It's kind of early to make a fight pick. But Heidi, where do you see this fight going?
I'm still leaning with the champ right now. I really am. I think, like you said, he's been conservative. Mm-hmm. And I think that he still will be conservative. And I think he'll manage to work out some sort of game plan where he can keep Conor at arm's distance, so to speak. And those leg kicks are going to be a big key, I think. And he's really going to need to utilize it. Plus, if he can maybe even manage to put him on his back. We haven't seen Conor there yet. I'd like to see what happens.
We just saw a pay-per-view where we saw two titles change hands, like, you know, in 30 minutes. So who's the next champ to go down? If you had to pick the next one to lose the belt, next title change hands, we have about five coming up in the next 3 months. Who's giving up the gold?
The closest pick I can make right now, and it's not because he just took the title from Pettis, but it would really be like RDA against Nurmagomedov if Nurmagomedov comes out ahead in that Cerrone fight.
I agree. That division is so in flux right now. There's no dominance. You know, the fact that RDA is on top, nobody saw that about a year or two ago, 6 months ago. We didn't see RDA running that division. So, yeah, I think he's the one that goes down. Although I'm a little curious on how this John Jones-Anthony Johnson fight plays out, because John is a terrible boxer.
Horrible.
If you watch his stand-up, all the trickery in the world is he leaves himself way too open. So there's a real chance Anthony Johnson connects and puts him to sleep. It's a possibility that Anthony Johnson could be the new light heavyweight champion.
He fights with jazz hands. That's why guys get poked in the eyes. Sorry, John Jones.
I pictured him in a leotard.
Oh, my God.
And those pointed shoes.
Yo, John Jones is like an easy target right now. Like, between everything that he's been through in the past couple of years, it's just like we all take shots. Amazing fighter. Best fighter in the world.
Great fighter.
But there are some serious holes that we all see in his personality and his game where it's like it's gotten to the point where you kind of want him to see him lose.
Yeah, he's the bad guy now. He's always should have been the bad guy.
He's not a good bad guy, though.
No, he's a horrible bad guy.
He has to embrace the dark side. Yes. He doesn't embrace it. And it's always, I'm sorry, I'm deleting it. Oh, I didn't mean it. Yeah, I was only kidding.
I got hacked.
No,
like,
yeah.
Like, he needs to go over Floyd Mayweather with his house, hang out with him for a few days, and learn how to be a bad guy. You know, and, like, not just a bad guy that just says things, but there's a lot of, like, you can have arrogance in just how you look at people. And John is an arrogant person. Heidi, I know you talked to John, like, off the record before. And I know you've seen, like, the dude is a little cocky bastard sometimes. And he's a nice guy. But he's got an air of arrogance around him they should embrace.
He's nice to, like, eight people.
He's nice. I mean, he's
like, nice to eight people.
He was nice to me.
Oh, everyone's nice to Heidi. Look at how can you not be nice to this? Look at
So wait, we got a fight card this weekend that I don't know, like, if anybody remembers.
Completely eclipsed.
Here's the question. And Heidi, we cover fights. And Kel, we cover fights. Are we just in a realm of just too many damn fights?
Yeah, there's a lot. And it's hard to keep track of. Luckily for me, the fact that the show that I do is 5 days a week, it keeps me on top of every single thing. I rarely unplug from the matrix, so to speak. I'm always in there, focused on, you know, I try at least like to be 3 weeks out and know every single main event. Mm-hmm. If I could ramble them all now, I would, but I don't think I can. I don't know if I have the capacity. But, you know, Mendez Llamas, you know, you have Krokop and Gonzaga too. Then you have Luke Rockhold and Machida. Then you have Demetrius Johnson and Horiguchi. Bam, did it.
Nice.
But, I can't. Look at that. Look at that. I didn't know who replaced the main event at 186.
Yeah, it was those two.
I've been that unplugged. Like, as soon as I heard Dillashaw was out, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, somebody.
But it is overload. It's like you barely have time to digest. Let's just take Pettis Dos Anjos. You barely have time to digest that and absorb that and be like, well, there's a new champion. And then for that to make any kind of headway around the you know, a whole spectrum so everybody's informed of it before there's another fight card and you're like, oh, wait, a rematch? Oh, wait, it's Gonzaga. Oh, didn't he head kick that dude? You know, and it's like, okay, well, now we got that again, you know? And so anyway, you know, then everybody starts picking up on it again, but it's hard to keep up. It is.
It's kind of scary because I know Dana says that, you know, it only helps the business at the end of the day, but combat sports is just completely different where you can't do like baseball, you can't do like basketball and have games every night. Because I think one of the things that hurts MMA with having so many fights is you don't really have ESPN like rattling off winners and losers, you know, every day, every mm-hmm. night with highlights. Mm-hmm. It's still like a niche sport where only a certain group of people still love this sport. So when you have a ton of fights and you're a casual fan, you stop giving a shit.
They should really have that, like, not just once a week on Fox Sports 1, but every day, a half-hour recap of an MMA show. I'm willing to host it.
Anyone listening to this podcast?
Exactly what Hello. You said.
Mm-hmm. Cut the check.
Top 10. Bam, bam, run through it. You'd have, like, Gaethje Palomino right at the top. You'd have the co-main from Bellator with Takoro, you know, and LC Davis. That was a great fight. You know, bam, 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 down the road. And then it's all – I do, like, a top five hits every day.
Yeah.
And so you do those top – you know, and then poof, and then the people are informed. But you're absolutely right. It should be a ticker across the bottom. This is what happened. Misha Tate plays bad April Fool's joke, says she's injured, and out of her Jessica I fight. You know, just going across the bottom.
You got to have that. You got to have that because just having fights is not enough.
But, I mean, once again, we're young in a young sport. The sport's growing faster than anyone's ever imagined. I'm sure Dana's head is just spinning on what to do. Like, he never imagined being able to put on this many fights a year, let alone how do you properly cover and get this to the masses. He's running behind this thing. It's the car is moving. Like he pushed it over the hill, now it's going downhill, and he's chasing it.
Yeah, it's true. But it's just the reality of the situation is you have so many cards. Like about 5 years ago, when you had an injury, the card wasn't decimated like it is now. You can find somebody to fill the spot. Now everybody's booked. Like how likely is it that we're gonna get to the May John Jones Anthony Johnson fight and that card's gonna be intact? What's the probability of seeing a card that gets announced in January make it and not just lose a preliminary fight? There's chances we lose the main or the co-main event.
Yeah.
How many have we got through a card yet this year that has been injury-free?
Weidman's on that, so I'm just going to just say that there's a strong possibility that it's not going to be the same.
Yeah.
Every time he fights, I just, I might catch him, might not. Like, I just assume he's going to get
hurt. He's like Derrick Rose?
Yeah. He's Mr. Glass at this point. Like, I...
Well, Andrew Bynum, too.
Yo,
remember him?
Yeah. Who's that? Who's Andrew Bynum?
Lakers fans just tuned out.
Yeah. What?
Some guy who played for the Sixers.
Right.
No, like, really, it's just I can't depend on him. If anyone's about to lose a belt, he's about to lose a belt just out of sheer lack of activity.
Hmm.
I mean, the guy never fights. I know we haven't seen Kane in forever either, but
right.
he just never fights. You can't fight once a year and then just be like, just take some time off. My toe messed up.
Do you think Vitor can beat him?
No, God, no.
Okay.
Vitor's
especially
not beating him.
Non-TRT Vitor, and he's been out since October 2013. No.
How old is Vitor?
Up there.
Yeah, Vitor,
we don't know.
He's not
38? No, 37?
Is he only 37?
No.
I think like
38,
he's older than that.
Maybe.
I feel
right
like
around
he's
there.
Older than that.
Yeah, I mean.
Just because I feel like he's in his 40s.
Machida almost got him.
Well, yeah, I mean.
And then you just look down the line. How long can you be an elite fighter with all these injuries?
That's true.
They're going to take a toll sooner or later. I mean, the guy he was 2 years ago beating Anderson Silva isn't the guy he is when we see him in May.
That's true.
He just can't be. You lose too much time. Everyone else has been training so much more than you.
So does Chris Weidman make it to the May card?
I think so. I mean, he's on
at this point.
He's on one cancellation, one fight. One cancellation, one fight.
Vitor Belfort's birthday is today. I just Googled it.
Really?
Yeah.
How old is he?
He is 37.
Really?
April 1st, 1977.
I swear.
Look at this.
I swear Vitor is older. I look at Vitor Belfort and I'm like, God, he's old. He's not. But he's been fighting forever, so.
Yeah. Oh, wait, no, he's 38. 77?
Oh, yeah, so then they didn't update it.
Heidi doesn't even know the year yet.
I can't.
She's still in 2014.
I'm like,
she's been working that hard that she doesn't even know.
Every day
I'm the one
same.
Half Asian that can't do math.
Oh.
Yeah. No, it's crazy, though. Like, if I had to pick, I don't know. It's so many fights, like you said, and it's just so hard to pick. Before we get you out of here, Heidi, what's the fight you're looking forward to most? It's a stacked summer. You know, there's tons of mains people know about, but you know... even, like, the lesser fights on the cards that might perk your ears a bit. So what are you looking forward to?
Well, I'm really looking forward to actually seeing Machida and Rockhold. I think stylistically that will be a fun fight for the ages. I just hope that it doesn't fall into that tactical scope where it's a little bit of just, you know, counter this and then we're seeing one strike counters. I want to see the fury unleashed from both of them. Also, I can't lie, and I don't know if it's just because of the tour, but Aldo and McGregor's right up there.
Yeah,
bubble wrap them. Put them in bubble wrap.
Encase them in glass. Yeah. Austin Powers, freeze them. Do what you got to do. Keep those two healthy.
Charmin commercials. Yeah. Remember those?
Yes.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I want to see it in July. But if someone got injured like right now, I wouldn't be too upset. Because that fight in Brazil, like they just moved it back to the Rousey card.
I'll get Conor McGregor killed.
It'd be the best. I mean, you can't top that for the UFC. Like, you have Ronda and Conor on the same card in Brazil against two Brazilian fighters.
The selfish person to me that's going to be at this fight says, no, that can't happen.
Listen, I don't got my passport yet. I'll go get my passport tomorrow and be in Brazil.
There you go.
All three of us go. I don't care if we got a backpack.
Yeah.
We'll figure our way through Mexico down there because we got to see that fight. If that was happening.
I got you in Mexico. Hablo español. I got that.
Look at that. So we want to thank Heidi for coming through. Thank you. Thank you so much. Plug your show. Let the people know.
Yeah. I host MMA Fight Corner. It's every day on Fox 670 AM here in Vegas. And it airs from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. on the daily.
Oh, yeah, and Heidi is a fantasy football wizard as well.
Team didn't do so well this year, but as soon as I drafted a poor quarterback, and, well, I thought was going to be an ace, but Drew Brees didn't have a great season.
Yeah.
See, can't go quarterback early. Look at that, Heidi. Heidi's teaching you guys something else. So thanks for listening today. Once again, this is The Corner with Kel Dansby.
And Andreas Hale.
Make sure you guys check us out every Thursday on SoundCloud, on iTunes. Once again, check the YouTube. We're going to have our videos up very soon. You know, right now, we can't even get the cord straight on this podcast.
Yeah. You don't want to see this, bruh. Yeah. You don't want to see what's going on in here. It's mad messy.
We got to clean it up a bit. But thank you guys for tuning in again. Can't wait to talk to you guys again next week.
From Insert Coins, man, we're out of here.
Later.
I wish I could.